and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when the smartest heads in America are all trying to figure out what does it all mean? This particular search of Mar-a-Lago, and Andrew McCarthy is right. We shouldn't call it a raid because a raid sounds like it was unauthorized. This was authorized. It was legal. But was it a good idea? Will it make Trump even more of a factor in our politics, or will it be the beginning of the end for the man from Mar-a-Lago? We will get to that with one of the most perceptive observers of our current political scene, the building in New York City. He issued a statement that cast himself as a target of third world tactics meant to undermine his possible candidacy. Okay, do you think it is even vaguely possible that the Justice Department authorizing this search had hoped that Trump wouldn't publicize it? Because they made no announcement. The announcement came from Trump. Did they think he might want to downplay it somehow? Or the Justice Department clearly knew this would become a very, very big story?
I think they certainly understood that when you're dealing with former President Trump, that the likelihood is that he will publicize any information that he has, whether or not it's in his interest or in the public interest. He's somebody who likes to be seen as in the know. And so if this had gone down quietly, really would have been against type for him. I can't speak to what they were hoping for, but there's no reason for the Justice Department to have wanted this publicized.
No, none. So why did they move now? In other words, would it have been better or worse for them to have executed a search like this after Trump announces his candidacy?
I think it would have been worse for everybody if it had been after Trump announced his candidacy, in terms of the delicate nature of a criminal investigation or even the search to just gather information related to a criminal investigation against somebody who is running for president of the United States. You know, for the reasons that Trump cites, I think most Americans, a visceral reaction to, a high-profile politician like Trump, somebody who is clearly leaning toward running for president, for them to be investigated by an FBI that's under the jurisdiction of a president of the other party, I think viscerally most Americans are repelled by that. And the thing that may weigh against that, and certainly does with a lot of Americans, is the particulars of the case. This is somebody in former President Trump who removed stuff from the White House that he wasn't supposed to remove, that was supposed to go to the National Archives, including apparently classified information. We remember Trump berating his Attorney General Jeff Sessions for not prosecuting Hillary Clinton over her email scandal and the potential mishandling of classified documents. So, again, just the sort of simple way of looking at it, I think most Americans think themselves, the FBI shouldn't be searching for stuff on a political candidate. And at the same time, the particulars here are unusual.
You also say in your piece, which we'll post at our website at michaelmedved.com, and the piece is entitled How the FBI Search at Mar-a-Lago Could Influence Another Trump Run for the President. You mention toward the end of the piece, you actually quote some experts on this, that the FBI raiding Trump's beloved Mar-a-Lago rips the 2024 Republican primary wide open. The Trump era is over and it's anybody's ball. That's what a GOP donor named Dan Eberhardt told you. The logjam of Republican candidates waiting to see if Trump was going to run just burst. There's no need for them to wait anymore. You think that's true?
I think that it's true that him being under investigation gives more reason to potential candidates to continue to campaign. We've seen them you know, visiting Iowa and New Hampshire. We've seen them meeting with the interest groups, you know, whether you're talking about former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Senators Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley, former Vice President Mike Pence. I think that will continue apace. It may even ramp up a little bit. The prospect that Donald Trump could be under indictment or potentially convicted of a crime means that that at least some Republicans will look for another candidate. At the same time, you know, I think this in the short term will bind a lot of Trump voters to Trump, and maybe even some who were waffling on him will become defensive of him because they'll look at this as a politically motivated investigation by the Justice Department, by the FBI. And so, you know, again, short term, you will see, I think, a boost for Trump and his base. And at the same time, these, you know, these other candidates are going to continue to campaign. I think Tom Cotton's due in New Hampshire next week.
Wow. Meanwhile, there's a question of the timing of all of this. And I know that there are a lot of conservatives who are very, very skeptical about the idea that President Biden didn't know about this, or that Ron Klain, his White House chief of staff, who manages a lot of decisions in the White House, that Ron Klain didn't know about this. They are swearing that they had no knowledge. The reason I kind of believe that is because this has to be the last thing in the world that Joe Biden wanted. He was about to do a victory parade because of the big so-called inflation reduction bill they passed, and a series of recent victories, including the CHIPS Acts, and they're gaining force on the abortion issue. And generally, this was supposed to be a time where Joe Biden was turning things around, and all of a sudden he's totally upstaged by his own Justice Department doing something that they had to know would be highly controversial.
Well, I know you you have quite the impressive legal education yourself, and remember at least some of these events. I mean, if you go back in time, at one point, nobody expected the Justice Department to be independent of the White House. Robert Kennedy, the brother of President John F. Kennedy, was the Attorney General. You had Nixon with the Saturday Night Massacre firing the Justice Department's top folks until the Solicitor General finally stepped up. And I guess so there was a resignation, firing a resignation, and then the Solicitor General, Robert Bork, stepped into the void to take over the department. And because of that, there were reforms, and you've got this, you know, presumption now that the Justice Department should be somewhat independent of the White House. As to what Ron Klain knew or what Biden knew, you know, I don't know what they knew. I do know that they've tried to give every perception that there is independence. What you do not see is President Biden attacking his attorney general or encouraging him on Twitter. As for the politics of it, Biden does well when Trump does well. It makes Democrats appreciate Biden more. So it may not be that bad for Biden if Trump has a big moment here where all the Trump supporters get behind him.
Can we talk for a moment about the upcoming primary in Wisconsin? It's today. They're voting. And why is it significant? We'll get to that with Jonathan Allen, author of Lucky, How Joe Biden Barely Won the Presidency. Coming up. More with Jonathan Allen, who is a senior national politics reporter for NBC News. He is also author of the best-selling book, Lucky, How Joe Biden Barely Won the Presidency. I wanted to ask you two things that are tangentially at least related to all of the news of the day regarding the search of Mar-a-Lago for some documents that President Trump had in his possession that he was supposed to have returned some time ago to the National Archives and to the control of the federal government. Some of what is in those documents, maybe we will find out in the days ahead, but we haven't yet. There's a primary election today for governor of Wisconsin. The senatorial setup in Wisconsin between Mandela Barnes, who's a very progressive, left-leaning Democrat. He will be the nominee for U.S. Senate against Ron Johnson. But it is unclear who is going to win what is turning into a very close primary between Rebecca Clefish, who I happen to know a little bit, who was the lieutenant governor for two terms, to Scott Walker. She has the endorsement of Scott Walker. She has the endorsement of Mike Pence and a lot of people locally in Wisconsin. But Trump's endorsement has gone to Tim Michaels, who's a businessman. He actually lives in New York, but leave that aside. And he is running promising decertification. And there is another candidate, Tim Ramthan, who's a state member of the state legislature, who's also in favor of decertification. In other words, they will do what Mike Pence refused to do. And in fact, they describe in the New York Times an interchange between Rebecca Clefish in the middle of her campaign. She was campaigning when a constituent came up to her and was very angry because Rebecca has been endorsed by Mike Pence. And she said, "I was wondering, if you get elected, are you going to resort to a rhino agenda like Pence or an awesome agenda?" And she basically said don't make up your mind based on what somebody else is doing. What about this idea that the 10 electoral votes of Wisconsin could actually be switched if one of these other Republicans, Tim Ramthan or Tim Michaels, actually won the governorship?
Well, I mean, number one, I would say it would have no effect. Right? I mean, there's no process for unseating President Biden and putting Donald Trump into the White House, no matter how many states choose to try to decertify their electors. And of course, if only one did it, that wouldn't even have the effect of flipping the Electoral College. I'm also fascinated by this discussion of Mike Pence as a rhino, because so far as I recall, there were only two things on which he disagreed with Donald Trump, the first of which being whether the election results should be overturned, whether the will of the voters should be superseded by these fake electors that were sent in, and the second one was whether or not Mike Pence should be hanged. I assume that Pence didn't believe he should be hanged, and I know that he didn't overturn the election, but the idea that he had an agenda different than President Trump's when he was in office is, you know, purely down to those two issues.
It is. Have you been out to Wisconsin to cover any of this particular heated primary?
I have not been to Wisconsin this summer, but I've been following it closely, and a couple of my colleagues are out there right now. I talk to them every day, and I talk to Wisconsin sources about these races.
Well, it's true, isn't it? And the polling indicates that Clefish could be competitive against the Democratic governor they're trying to unseat in Wisconsin. And Ramthan and Michaels would have a very tough time in a state that that supported Scott Walker, but has recently turned, at least in some of its gubernatorial and presidential choices, more in a Democratic direction.
The governor that they're trying to unseat is a Democrat, Tony Evers, and there's certainly a kind of traditional frame for the campaign if it's Evers versus Clefish, and it'll be a referendum on the current governor. It'll be a referendum on issues like inflation, jobs in Wisconsin, things you would typically expect. Obviously, some of the social issues will factor in there as well. I know Clefish and Evers have traded barbs on abortion, but I think if you see either of the other two nominated. Particularly Michaels, who's got a chance of winning and seems to be running pretty neck and neck with Clefish. If he wins the nomination, you're going to see a much broader set of issues included in the general election, including whether or not to revisit 2020, which I think a lot of voters just don't want to do, whether or not they were happy with the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. And there's also the question of what happens in a presidential campaign. You know Joe Biden. You wrote the book on his last campaign. He insists every chance he gets that regardless of very low approval ratings, regardless of some feeling now in the White House that he's not getting credit for real accomplishments, that Joe Biden is going to be a candidate for reelection. Your guess, knowing the president of the United States, is that he's telling the truth, he's going to be running even if the odds are against him? Or do you think there is a chance that he will, sometime after the midterms, announce that he's going to concentrate on this one term?
I think both are true. I would say that at the moment, Joe Biden wants to run for re-election, or is certainly saying he's going to run for re-election. We've seen him run for president three times. There were several other elections dating back to at least as far as 1980, where he considered running for president. This is somebody who's been running for president for most of his adult life, and I don't see any reason he would stop now. But it is also possible that he will stop, and part of that has to do with Trump. If you know, when I talk to Democratic voters and talk to Democratic donors and insiders, they feel like the reason for a Biden reelection campaign is best made when he's talking about being an antidote to Trump. And if Trump were to not seek election, then the Democrats feel a lot less comfortable about the idea of Biden versus a Republican nominee who's a generation younger.
All fascinating. Jonathan Allen, appreciate your commentary and your perspective. When we come back, how is it possible that Trump got 10 million more votes in 2020 and lost, but as compared to what he got in 2016? We'll talk about that mystery and more coming up on the Medved Show. Michael Medved Show. Some sad news, but it is news. Marshawn Lynch, Beast Mode, who Seattleites remember very fondly, had a very substantial role in our only Super Bowl victory, and for the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch was arrested following a traffic stop in Las Vegas. So said the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department in a statement today. Police said that stop was conducted on a driver later identified as Lynch for suspected driver impairment. During the course of the stop, officers determined that Lynch was impaired and conducted an arrest, according to the statement. Lynch was then transported to the Las Vegas City Jail and booked for driving under the influence, police said. Additionally, Lynch was cited with a failure to refuse surrender, a failure to drive in a travel lane, and for driving a vehicle that was not registered. This all according to USA Today. Well, I hope he's feeling better today. And it's just a sad note on someone who once upon a time, it was years ago actually, but he was something of a local hero. And it's hard not to wish him the best. He was also particularly entertaining about his refusal not to do interviews. Probably that refusal will be very much applying to these recent developments. Speaking of recent developments, there was a coincidence in the search of Mar-a-Lago. It occurred on yesterday, August 8th, what else occurred on August 8th back in 1974? Well, there was this from the President of the United States at that time. His name was Richard Nixon. Here's what he told the country to everyone's shock in in August 8th of 1974, clip 14.
To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
President Nixon actually, in what I think most historians would agree was a noble act and something that he did very much in the national interest. Gerald Ford became president saying, our long national nightmare is over. August 8th, all those years flash forward. You could say that these events with the Justice Department authorizing the search of the president's home to recover some of the documents that he has not yet returned, declassified documents he's not supposed to have, our long national nightmare seems to be just getting revved up again. And again, that's not something that anyone should appreciate or enjoy. And speaking of long national nightmare, President Trump actually has a campaign-style ad that's about 4 minutes long. It's a video that was posted on the internet just hours after the FBI executed a search warrant. And the video has this to say, together with stark black and white imagery. It's very scary. And a soundtrack that sounds like a thunderstorm. Listen.
We are a nation in decline. We are a failing nation. We are a nation that has the highest inflation in over 40 years, where the stock market just finished the worst first half of a year in more than five decades. We are a nation that has the highest energy cost in its history. And we are no longer energy independent or energy dominant, which we were just two short years ago. We are a nation that is begging Venezuela and Saudi Arabia for oil. We are a nation that surrendered in Afghanistan, leaving behind dead soldiers, American citizens, and $85 billion worth of the finest military equipment in the world.
Okay, American carnage. That's the way he described it in his inauguration speech, that back in 2017. And more from the former president.
We are a nation that allowed Russia to devastate a country, Ukraine, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and it will only get worse. We are a nation that has weaponized its law enforcement against the opposing political party like never before. We've never seen anything like this. We are a nation that no longer has a free and fair press. Fake news is about all you get. We are a nation where free speech is no longer allowed, where crime is rampant like never before, where the economy has been collapsing, where more people died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. We are a nation that is allowing Iran to build a massive nuclear weapon and China to use the trillions and trillions of dollars it's taken from the United States to build a military to rival our own. We are a nation that over the past 2 years is no longer respected or listened to all around the world. And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke.
And they add, it tries to end on a positive note with the screen reading at the end, the best is yet to come. It sounds like this.
But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country. There is no mountain we cannot climb. There is no summit we cannot reach. There is no challenge we cannot meet. There is no victory we cannot have. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield ever, ever, ever. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never, ever back down. We will never let you down. As long as we are confident and united, the tyrants we are fighting do not stand even a little chance. Because we are Americans, and Americans kneel to God and God alone. And it is time to start talking about greatness for our country again.
And then the screen says, the best is yet to come, / Donald Trump. It's an effective piece of television? Yeah, I think that it is. And fascinating, of course, that he puts out that hint of his 2024 campaign the day after the raid. There's another revelation about a forgotten chapter in our history that is very much worth recalling, and we will, coming up on The Medved Show. Show, there's just been a major discovery in New Jersey, of all places. And it's one of those stories that I really think is worth looking at, because it tells you some things that most Americans are reluctant to recognize. The headline in the science section of the New York Times, Battlefield from 1777, middle of the American Revolution, yields bones and memories. And this is about a battle that occurred on October 22nd, 1777. And if you look at the number 1777, the British said in the midst of the revolution, that would be the year of the hangman, because the three sevens in a row look like gallows, and that's where they were going to put George Washington and John Adams and all of the other patriots who were fighting for independence. But on the day of the attack in 1777, there was extreme confidence on the part of a number of Hessian mercenaries. These were German soldiers who had been hired by King George because they had problems with military recruitment, just as we have today. And the force of 2,300 mercenaries was led by one Colonel Emil Ulrich von Donop, a courageous leader with a fiery temper, according to letters written by his officers. He was attacking a fort that was defended by only 534 Yankee soldiers, including members of the 6th Virginia Regiment and the New Jersey Militia, as well as members of the 1st and 2nd Rhode Island Regiments, two of the nation's first integrated military units. 48 of the American soldiers were black. The regiments also included native people of the Narragansett tribe, which, again, goes to a remarkable fact about the Revolution that most people don't realize. These were, even at a time of slavery, freed people of African descent who put their lives on the line. Colonel von Dunlop was confident of victory. Fort Mercer will be Fort Dunlop, or I shall be dead, he wrote to General William Howe, commander of the British military forces. When the Hessians arrived at the fort, Colonel von Dunlop sent an officer to call for the Americans to surrender. The King of England orders all his rebellious subjects to lay down their arms, the demand stated. If they stand battle, no quarter whatever will be given. In other words, we'll kill you all. The American commander, who's Colonel Christopher Green, soon replied, "The Americans accepted the challenge, and no quarter should be taken on either side." Fighting commenced at 4 p.m. From the river, 13 galleys of the Pennsylvania Navy, Pennsylvania had its own navy, immediately bombarded the Hessians with cannon fire, and the soldiers inside Fort Mercer opened up with muskets and 14 cannons of their own. Two battalions and one regiment of Hessian soldiers advanced through the barrage. Their assault was slowed by trees that had been cut down. Branches had been sharpened and stacked in a line around the fort. The battle lasted just 75 minutes. When it was over, 377 Hessian soldiers and just 14 Americans had died. It was a battle of Red Bank. Most people haven't heard about it. They found a whole series of Hessian remains in a mass grave, and they're now investigating them with DNA and more. It's another intriguing artifact found at the site was a British gold coin worth about 1 month's salary for the average soldier that may have belonged to Lieutenant Colonel Ernest Rudolf von Schick, who commanded the Hessian regiment and died in the fighting. Again, when you see the Russians hiring mercenaries the way they do, that's really tells you something about how the more the world changes, the more it stays the same. Speaking about the world changing, there is a list that was put together by The Economist magazine. We're going to feature it in our newsletter because it's fascinating. And it is a list of the best and worst places to live in the world, on planet Earth. And the 10 best and the 10 worst, the U.S. isn't featured on the 10 best. The top-rated city in this list of 172, Atlanta is the top-rated American city at number 26. But the top cities in the world are Vienna, yeah, Austria, Zurich, a whole range of Scandinavian cities, and three Canadian cities, Calgary, Vancouver, and Toronto. The worst cities in the world, number one, Damascus. Tehran is up there. And seven of the cities are in the Islamic world. Three others are in Africa. So basically, what do you learn from that? What you learn is that, first of all, in the United States, Atlanta is rated number 26. Washington, D.C. is second in this country, named number 30. What are the worst American cities? Well, we will cover that at another time. What are the worst movies? The worst movies tend to be ones that have the worst scripts. And this is a basic illustration of what goes wrong, even in aspiring animated projects. There's a new movie called Luck with the voices of Jane Fonda and Simon Pegg and Whoopi Goldberg. And no, it's even less entertaining than some episodes of The View with Whoopi Goldberg. Listen.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
In the new animated extravaganza, an orphan girl who's had nothing but bad luck gets to change her fate with the help of a lucky black cat and a kindly leprechaun in Luck, now streaming on Apple TV+.
I'll leave as soon as you give me another lucky penny.
You best start blending in.
This is where good luck is born.
Well, no, this is where ill-conceived disasters are born. Despite the big names associated with this project, including John Lasseter, who previously worked on some of Disney Pixar's greatest hits, like the Toy Story series and Cars. The voices, including Jane Fonda and Whoopi Goldberg and Simon Pegg, are totally wasted, mostly unrecognizable, and the plot is so sluggish and ridiculously confusing that you'll have no interest in an extended stay in the twinned fantasy worlds of good and bad luck. Rated G, 1.5 stars for a miserable misfire called luck. And on the Michael Medved show, the idea that you have the land of good luck and the land of bad luck right next to each other, and that there is no connection between good luck that you might make for yourself and bad luck that is just applied to you. I'm also deeply skeptical about that message for young people. I'll tell you what else leaves me deeply skeptical is the aftermath of the FBI raid. Yes, there's going to be lots of ugly charges and countercharges, but why all of the talk, seriously, about civil war? How would that work out? How did it work out last time? Well, last time you had a redemptive civil war, but 700,000 dead. We'll talk about it next time on the Medved Show. There's also a prominent figure in the world of sports who wants all Mount Rushmore analogies or references canceled, and claims that the mountain itself, with all of the images on it, the four images of the great American presidents, should be retired immediately because it is offensive. Offensive to whom? We will get to that next time on the Medved Show. And there is a claim that people are continuing to underestimate Donald Trump, and that as long as he is available, the Republican Party is unlikely to opt for any imitation. Is that true? And military recruitment woes endanger national security. We can't simply fill the bill by hiring a bunch of Hessians who are going to go on to their doom, as we were talking about. The U.S. is facing a shortfall of troops. There are various means being presented on how we can actually solve the problem. And Nancy Pelosi, in an interview about her Asia trip, comes back saying, China is one of the freest societies in the world. A slip of the tongue or an extremely bad and unfortunate blunder? We will cover all of that and much more, including the results of a bunch of primaries.